Hey guys, Jim Cox, Devon Financial Partners, Park Avenue Securities, and here today with an interview with Andrew Yang. I'd seen an interview with Andrew on Bloomberg where he talked about the issue of AI, artificial intelligence, and the need for universal basic income. Andrew's also running for president of the United States in the 2020 election and wanted to kind of get a sense of his background and kind of his more details around AI and what he thinks that's going to do to the economy, among other issues. So, Andrew, thanks for taking the time to chat.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about your background. You have a background in tech or in venture development.
Yeah, that's right. I spent the last 7 years as a founder and CEO of Venture for America, which is an organization that trains young, enterprising college graduates to join startups in Detroit, Cleveland, Baltimore, St. Louis, and about a dozen other American cities to generate job growth. Before that, I ran a national education company that was acquired by the Washington Post in 2009. Hmm. And so I spent the last number of years working with hundreds of entrepreneurs in companies around the country, helping their businesses grow, and learned a lot about what's happening in the U.S. economy. And as you mentioned at the top, I'm very, very confident that we are going through the greatest technological and economic shift in human history, and that it's already in the midst of displacing millions of American workers, and our labor market is not adjusting meaningfully.
I completely agree with you. I mean, I see the same thing, and I think when you know, just from my two cents, when you look at some of the statistics that are measured, like unemployment and so forth, that are really that trumpet economic strength, I think inside those numbers there are actually a lot of cracks that people aren't aware of and kind of get missed with some of the underlying changes that are taking place.
Oh yeah, I mean that unemployment stat is malpractice at this point. So the labor force participation rate has declined to 62.7%. which is a multi-decade low and the same level as El Salvador and the Dominican Republic. Mm. There are 95 million Americans who are already out of the workforce. The underemployment rate for recent college graduates is 44%, according to the New York Fed. So even if you're lucky enough to graduate from college, you're often not getting a job that requires a college degree. And 94% of the jobs created between 2005 and 2015 were gig economy temp and contractor jobs that do not have benefits or meaningful career paths forward. So you're looking at really deep structural problems in the labor market that are already having profound effects on our way of life. The life expectancy in this country has declined for the last 2 years, which is almost unheard of in a developed country, and it's primarily a result of a surge in suicides among middle-aged Americans. 7 Americans die of opiates every hour. There are now more Americans filing for disability than work in construction. When you actually start digging into the numbers, as you suggest, you can see the structural weakness. And this is in the midst of what's supposed to be the longest economic expansion in a long, long time. So if this is what we're experiencing in year 10 of an expansion, imagine when the next downturn hits.
Exactly. So what role do you think AI plays in terms of some of the changes that have taken place, artificial intelligence, robotics, and so forth?
Well, sure. So the two clearest examples I drive people's attention towards is automated trucks and retail. And so you don't require really general intelligence level AI. You just need AI that's sophisticated enough to keep trucks from going off, which is a very complicated task, don't get me wrong. So truck driving is the most common job in 29 states. There are 3.5 million truckers, and another 5 to 7 million retail workers in truck stops, motels, and diners around the country. Mm. And the savings from automating truck driving are estimated by Morgan Stanley to be $168 billion per year, which is why we have hundreds, maybe thousands of the smartest people in the country in Silicon Valley working on automating truck driving. So you can see where this is going to head. My friends in Silicon Valley tell me that their current direction is to enable warehouses full of teleoperators in Nevada and Arizona that pipe into a truck anytime the computer becomes less confident as to what to do. And that there'll be truck drivers that climb into trucks 10 miles outside of urban areas, but the number of truck drivers you need is going to decline tremendously over the next 5 to 10 years.
It'll be like tugboat drivers coming, pulling a boat into a harbor, basically.
Yeah, so if you imagine the 3.5 million truck drivers who are 94% male, average age 49, average education high school or 1 year of college, how many of them are you going to need in the tugboat truck era? I mean, maybe half, right? And that would be optimistic. And so, you know, what are the 1.75 million newly unemployed 50-year-old men, 10% of whom actually own their own trucks, 80,000 of whom are ex-military? So one of the issues is that the level of unionization among truck drivers is now down to 13%. So there's not going to be any collective bargaining solution. It's just going to happen to people.
So what's the solution? I mean, you can't be a Luddite and try to outlaw technology, or at least I don't think that's really the solution. So how do you help people live a productive life in that kind of an environment?
Yeah, so you certainly can't be a Luddite. And we save thousands of lives. About 4,000 people die in accidents with trucks every year. So as president, my plan is first the freedom dividend, where every adult gets $1,000 a month paid for by a new value-added tax. And we need to move to a value-added tax because income taxes are terrible at harvesting the revenue from AI software and machines.
Yeah.
The beneficiaries tend to be large global tech companies who just push the taxes to Ireland or the Cayman Islands or whatever. So if you have a value-added tax, then can meaningfully harvest the gains and then distribute them more broadly to the American people in a way that will at least enable transitions. The second thing I will do is I will install a trucking transition czar, because this population is easily, to me, the most significant in terms of the victims of displacement that we can identify and actually organize some kind of transition program for.
Well, that's still a few years in the future. I mean, the other group that's being disposed is really retail, right? I mean, Amazon and other companies have really, you know, done a number in terms of brick-and-mortar retail.
Yeah, that's immediate, as you say. 30% of malls are going to close in the next 4 years, and 10% of all Americans work in retail. The median age is 39, education, high school, majority are female. And they're not going to have any great options if their stores, if the mall is closed, because they're often among the weakest in the labor market. And if the malls are closing, it's not like the stores across town are going to be hiring. So you're seeing this massive structural shift from brick and mortar retail to Amazon to the tune of about $40 billion per year. And it's just now hitting a point where brick-and-mortar retail is not viable in many parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think I've seen examples where universal basic income has been tried in a number of different places and had success, even in the United States. An experiment, I think it was in, like, North or South Carolina.
I mean, that stuff was beautiful, where you literally saw kids' personalities change with the parents getting a bit of money. You see mental health improve, graduation rates improve, domestic violence goes down.
one of the things I thought was impressive was you also saw more entrepreneurial tendencies and people willing to take risks to kind of start their own business, which, you know, I think, like you said, I think this is the greatest age that mankind's ever gone through, but we need to kind of navigate it. But for an entrepreneur, there's a lot of opportunity. It's just you need some help doing that.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head where entrepreneurship is born of a mindset of abundance where you feel secure and then you go about trying to solve problems and building businesses. So that's what I've seen over my years working with hundreds of entrepreneurs around the country. And universal basic income of even $1,000 a month would create 4.5 million new jobs according to the Roosevelt Institute. In part because people would be starting and patronizing businesses around the country at much higher levels. Right now, we're trending in the other direction, where in 80% of the country, more businesses are closing than are being opened.
Yeah. So what are some other things that we can do to foster entrepreneurship moving forward?
Well, I mean, I spent 7 years full-time trying to boost entrepreneurship, and I am convinced that there needs to be a wholesale restructuring of our economy to become more human-centered to enable more people to start businesses. Because if you think about the businesses of yesteryear, what would people have started? They would have started hardware stores or restaurants in these towns. And now many of those businesses no longer make sense. You know, and that's why you have this massive migration into like gig economy jobs and whatnot. So the things that people do to support entrepreneurship, I mean, I love them all, but we have to be honest, where the number of entrepreneurship programs in colleges have tripled and the rates of business formation among 18 to 30-year-olds have been cut in half. So it's not like more school is going to help people start businesses. We need to provide people a sense of economic security and stability to make them optimistic enough to go out there and open their own business.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I mean, right now, 59% of Americans, according to Bankrate, can't afford to pay an unexpected $500 bill. So, I mean, if you're in that circumstance, starting a business is probably out of the question.
I agree. What is your take on climate change and what can be done with kind of how things are developing in terms of the environment and so forth?
Well, climate change is very, very real. We're at a point now where, to me, we should be investing resources in geoengineering, which is finding ways to slow the worst consequences of climate change. And so there was one study I read about that made me very, very excited, which is that we might be able to slow down the rate of sea level rise by pushing a wall of earth into the base of various glaciers, because the way that glaciers melt is that warm water currents deep below the surface hit their base and then melt them over time. So that's the kind of thing that our government needs to be leading the way in, because if we don't do it, China's going to start doing it in about 20 years. And we need to be at the table and lead. Climate change and AI are similar in that regard, where we're in many ways competing against the Chinese, because they're not going to wait around for us.
What else do you think sets you apart from kind of the traditional Democratic candidates that would be running for office in 2020?
I mean, you probably got a sense of it from this conversation. You know, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm a builder. I want to solve problems. I think that the Democratic Party badly needs some new solutions and ideas and policies and energy. And that's my goal. I just want to make this country strong and prosperous for my children. I have two little boys. And right now I'm very deeply concerned about the society we're going to leave to them. Mm.
As you were saying that, what it actually reminded me of was Paul Tsongas. When Bill Clinton ran the first time, He ran, one of the other candidates was Paul Tsongas, a senator from Massachusetts, who basically ran focused on, you know, the liberal human aspect, but also conservative financial in terms of encouraging business, entrepreneurship, and so forth. So it's not out of the question. And I think because of what Tsongas did, it actually made Clinton more responsive to that kind of role that he had to play in terms of the party. So I think there's a lot of hope for what you're trying to do. So that's awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Jim. If you or anyone listening to this would like to find out more information, you can just Google my name, Andrew Yang. Mm-hmm. My website is yang2020.com. And a book that Jim referenced is called The War on Normal People. It's on sale at Amazon, no surprise, mm-hmm. and any other places around the country. But would love to get smart, pro-social Americans together to work on these problems, because our problems are getting worse and worse, and we need to get our acts together as fast as we can.
Have you talked to other people in terms of Silicon Valley or entrepreneurs and so forth that are able to kind of create a brain trust around pushing forward these kinds of issues?
I'm happy to say that I have, and that I have dozens, soon hundreds of entrepreneurs and investors and tech CEOs supporting the campaign because they see the same problems that you and I do.
Awesome.
And yeah, we're going to have to solve these problems. I mean, I believe the state's going to have to be involved because the problems are so massive. But I'm happy to say that the tech world sees the same things that we see.
Well, more than anything else, I think it's about reestablishing really a social contract, right? I mean, the reality is the social contract has been destroyed by, you know, the last 30 years worth of change that's taken place, whether it's in terms of climate or technology or, you know, corporate governance or lack thereof.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we need to establish what it means to be American.
Yeah.
And what you get, like what, you know, that one of the policies I have on my website is what I call the American Exchange Program, where as a senior in high school, you spend 2 months living and working in other parts of the country with different groups of people. And I believe that would be a very formative set of experiences that's increasingly necessary.
Awesome. One last time, how can people get a hold of you if they want to reach out to you?
Fantastic. Well, they can just reach out to me at my website, yang2020.com. I'm on Twitter and very active, Andrew Yang, VFA. Just Google Andrew Yang. I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. But again, we need to work on these problems together because they're not going to solve themselves. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably in a rare position where you can do something about these changes as opposed to just experiencing them as most American workers will.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, I thank you for taking your time to chat, and you know, hopefully as the campaign goes on, we can chat some more.
Yeah, I'd enjoy that. Thank
awesome.
You so much, Jim.
Hey, take care. Have a good day. Thanks, Andrew.
You too.
Bye-bye.